evening and welcome to episode 60 of the Deck Tease podcast brought to you by LegitMTG.com. My name is Aaron Campbell. My guest tonight is a blogger. He's a podcaster. He's a streamer. He's Canadian. He's a father. And he is the member of the A-team that I would marry if we were playing Fuck, Marry, Kill, Mr. Scotty Mack. How are you?
I'm awesome, Aaron. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Did you know I wanted to marry you?
You mentioned that once or twice. I'm totally the marrying type, though, so I'll take that as a compliment.
You are. You're reliable. You're dependable. You're cute. You make cute babies.
Oh, that's one thing I do. Let me tell you. My children. Wow.
I remember the first time I saw your daughter, I was reading an article that Heather had written about you on Legit, which we'll get to a little bit later, and just that cute little girl. And I remember I couldn't even scroll down because I was so enthralled with that little face. Yeah. And I was just like, who is that little cutie? And I just gazed at her and I was like, she's adorable.
Yeah. Lily is the apple of my eye, let me tell you. She's just, and every bit as sharp as she is beautiful, she's going to be dangerous. And tall too. I didn't mention tall. She's literally 3 feet tall. She's 2 years old. Like, she's going to be a giant. It's ridiculous.
And she's the baby that's featured in Durfington's avatar of you, correct? On the A-team site? Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So very, very happy to have you on the show. I know we talked about doing this before. And we finally got around to it. And I'm really happy that we managed to make it happen.
Well, I'm really excited for it. This is pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's sort of my secret plan. Like, I know that I'll never be on the A-team, but if I can at least say I've had every member of the A-team on my show, it'll be like I was there.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. So to get things started, this past weekend, we not only had FNM and we had the first big event of the new standard. I was at FNM and I was glued to the Worcester footage. So I know that you weren't necessarily at FNM and you checked in a little bit. So do you have any thoughts on the new standard from what you saw so far?
Yeah, like, I don't think it was any surprise that Esper was going to be really big this weekend.
I was surprised.
Well, with it dominating block as well as it did, there's a couple really good tools that came into it, obviously. Mm-hmm. Thoughtseize out of the sideboard for the control mirror seems very good. You've got Ashiok as well, obviously made some good appearances. But Jace Architect of Thought is just very good against mono red. Hero's Downfall has been a really nice versatile card that I knew would see a bunch of play. But there's no more Cavern of Souls, so Essence Scatter's got to be good.
Mm-hmm. So. I went into it more concerned with I was really worried about how three colors were going to do, because most of the posts that I read leading up to this were telling you, don't play three colors. It's a bad idea. The Scrylands are terrible. It's not going to work. UW or go home. And I remember going into FNM the other night, not really expecting to win. I wanted to walk away from FNM, you know, being able to answer the question, is three colors viable? And I went 2-2 that night, and I did not have a problem with mana. The only times I did lose had nothing to do with mana. I had all the mana in the world. I was either just bricking on Jace, bricking on my Azorius Charms, just not drawing what I needed, not getting to Etherling in time. I lost to a mono white control deck,
nice.
Which was a thing. it was basically Gideon, Ajani, Silence, some other shenanigans, and that kind of hurt. Giving your 6/6 indestructible Gideon double strike and flying from Ajani is fucking not fun.
That's funny.
very hard to deal with as well. And then I lost to somebody who was trying to make Bant Hexproof happen again, which was also not cool. And those are just two decks I really wasn't prepared for. I really wasn't sure how to sideboard for anything. Mm. And those were only two decks I lost to. But I left that night feeling very confident that three colors was okay. Yeah. So I considered FNM a success.
Especially in Esper. You don't really care that all of your lands come into play tapped. I mean, you're playing Guild Gates already in the block version, mm-hmm. and now your Guild Gates scry for one.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems like a no-brainer.
Well, scry was also really good with the mana fixing, too, where, like, you were able to look at the lands you have, and you're going, okay, can I, you know, do I have the correct mana to cast what I have? Can I possibly scry for a land that comes in untapped? The scry was a huge mana fixing boon. And I think especially if you're playing three colors, you want the scry lands. I think if you're doing two colors, you can maybe get away with it. Like, you don't need them as much. But I think for three colors, they're huge.
Yeah,
they're
but huge. I mean, like, unless you're playing a really aggressive deck or where you're trying to curve out with a lower-end mid-range deck, mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to lose anything by playing your on-color dual lands.
Right.
So.
Right. I was very surprised to see, green-white aggro didn't seem like it did too well. Like, I know a lot of people were really gunning that to be a big thing. They were going all in with the Voices and the Smiters and the Tristanis and the Fleece Mane Lions and Rar, and it didn't do so hot.
Yeah, I saw a lot of like the coverage that I did watch. I actually saw almost like two rounds back to back. We're playing green white aggro, and I mean, like, I'm just going through the coverage right now, and I mean, in the top 32, I think there were only maybe three or four lists, and then Anthony Lowry's obviously, you know, ex legit MTG-er, ex everywhere else now, you know, also Deck Tease alumni, like, you know, good old Anthony, been there, done that. You know, he had a pretty sweet deck tech too, looking at the deck. So, I don't know. I mean, it just seemed like probably the safe choice. You know, it seemed to have that good matchup against mono red, and, you know, be fairly reasonable against Esper. I mean, like, probably not a bad idea playing the scissors deck, you know, in the first week.
I just felt like red was able to come back a lot faster. Like, I remember watching Owen, I think, had a feature match or two, and I was very surprised that he was even playing mono red because it seems a little bit beneath him, to be honest. I was surprised at how red was just able to keep coming back. Like, I remember even Christian Calcano, he was playing Esper. He played a very creepy kid playing mono red. I have no problem saying that. Kid gave me the creeps. But he was playing mono red, and Calcano, I think, blew like three Supreme Verdicts, and this guy was like, Foundry, Foundry, you're good. And then he'd verdict, and he'd be like, all right, Cackler, Foundry, go. And he was just constantly able to replenish his board. And it felt like with green white, because their creatures are a little more expensive, they weren't able to replenish that fast. And then the verdict seemed to hurt a lot more.
Yeah, the exchange there obviously is that your guys tend to be just more resilient, right? So that's where they're trying to go with just general quality over quantity. And I mean, whether that's correct or not, I mean, that's going to be dictated as well by next week. I think that traditionally it's like the control decks apparently are the ones that are hardest to build, but I'm fairly sure that in this format right now, I mean, the control decks fairly pretty much build themselves. There's a few obviously like flavor choices, but I mean, basically you just want to kill creatures all the time. The mid-range decks are looking to they have to really pick their shot, and I think they need to understand what they have to be good against. And so I think we'll see a nice influx of those next week, especially if Jerry has anything to do with it.
Yeah, he was surprisingly quiet. I know that he was championing a black, white, and red deck, which I actually really liked. And I know people had tried to make that happen pre-rotation, and I thought it just looked silly. But this time around, it looked really cool. And I was like, okay, I'd get behind this. So if that were to become a thing, I'd hop on board with that.
Well, it's Jund, right? I love that he's joking about it, but truthfully, it's Jund. What's interesting is that Jund has two flavors right now. Well, three actually, technically, because there are people still playing Jund. But like, there's Junk is a real color combination. You know, when you get into these mid-range decks where you have the capacity to base green as one of them, you know, Sylvan Caryatid is very good. And I think that as long as you've got ways to gain life, you're looking at things like Obsidat, you've got access to, you know, Blood Baron, Centaur Healer, like junk midrange can be very good. People are playing the Whip in this deck as well, which gives all you guys lifelink, so it doesn't matter. You know, junk can be very, very strong. I know a few people that are brewing on that as well, trying to lead into Pro Tour, so there's that. And then black, white, red midrange is the same sort of thing. I mean, a lot of the same tools that Jund was using to try to control the board. I mean, you're looking at cards like, you know, Dreadbore, Mortars, Rakdos Return. Like, these are all, you know, fantastic cards. I mean, Anger of the Gods is a blowout against most of the decks that we saw doing well that weren't control decks. You know, so I'm really excited. Like, I feel like we're gonna see a lot of the same sort of decks that we had, sort of, but I think we're like initially, they're going to kind of shift just enough to be interesting.
Yeah,
And so I'm pretty excited.
I was really excited to see Ashiok, because I felt like a lot of people were eating crow about that card, because there were so many people that were like, you know, it's terrible. I thought it did really well. I was really excited to see Ashiok played because so many rules interactions came up. Like, I didn't know this, but if you have Ashiok, we'll call it Ashiok number one, and you go on an exiling spree with that, and then let's say that Ashiok dies and you bring in Ashiok two, you can't cast creatures at the first Ashiok exiled. I didn't know that. And I'm really glad that the stream happened, because had that not happened and had I not followed some judges, I wouldn't know that. I also heard it was a bad idea to cast an Etherling with your Ashiok, because if you try to exile it, it goes back to the opponent. So I was really happy just to have those ruling clarifications come up, because I wouldn't have known that, and it'd be my luck that I would try those things, and then my plan would go to hell.
I see. Yeah.
I didn't see as much Elsbeth as I thought. I hope that changes, because I know people really wanted her to be good.
She's absurd.
Yeah.
Like I watched a couple of the games where Max Tietz was playing. I can't help but giggle every time I say that.
I just every time I look at him, I see Kevin Federline, so that's my word association with Teats,
It's
but
really funny because his occupation is he's a guitar teacher,
yeah.
and like he is the absolute perfect guitar teacher. So I think it's awesome. But like, so he was main decking two of them in his day, in his list, and he came in second, losing only to Mono Red. And I think the reason he lost is because it's really tough for his deck to kind of get past or deal with Fanatic of Magus. But that guy's insane. We'll get to that in a minute. But he really, really, really put Elspeth to work. I mean, basically, the Mono Red deck has almost no way of dealing with Elspeth. Like if the blue eye control player can untap, or any control player can untap with an Elspeth in play, there's literally zero chance that Mono Red's going to win without a Fistful of Burn.
Yeah, I was really excited to see that. I remember when he dropped the Elsbeth, I think he was playing Owen, and you could literally see Owen put his head in his hands, like, oh my god, like, what am I
Yeah.
gonna do against Elsbeth? And he did manage to get rid of it, but there was a moment there where you could see his face drop, and that's a good sight to see. I will say the one card I'm very torn about, and I know we talked about this a little bit on Twitter today, is Thoughtseize. I don't know what to do with this card. Like, I'm not a modern player, I'm not a legacy player. It's a card that I feel like you really have to play well, and there's so much that goes into it. Like, I know Reed Duke wrote a whole article about it, like the timing and what to choose, and like it just feels so awkward to me still, where I never know when to play it, I never know what's worth pulling, I never know how many to have, I never know if I should put it in my main or my side. I'm
Sure.
so up in the air about this card right now.
So here's because I was part of that discussion too. Here's where I'm at on Thoughtseize right now, based on what we've seen with the format to date. Okay, so it's a straight up replacement for Duress in the sideboard for control arbitrarily. Okay, so that's the primary reason. So why? Because not only can it take walkers, revs, and whatever else do you want, it also picks Aetherling. Your life points are literally irrelevant in the matchup, and it's just an upgrade to Duress. So if you look at it that way, that's one way to do it. The other thing is it actually has play against the more mid-range decks because it gives you that proactive way to just pluck the threat out of their hand, and then also gives you the perfect information, like any other discard spell would, right? Gives you the information to sequence your plays and understand the threats that you're against. Being able to Thoughtseize an Obsidian is so good.
Well, I think someone had mentioned though that it might not be the time for Thoughtseize yet, just because we still are seeing so many fast red aggro decks. I know there was a debate happening about whether it's worth it to keep Thoughtseize in against those decks and to waste a Thoughtseize on an Ash Zealot or something simple like that. What do you think?
Yeah, I would. I'm not in the main deck camp
Yeah.
on Thoughtseize right now. No, I'm just not. Like, you really just need every single card that you can possibly have to survive the mono red matchup. And I just don't feel like one that's going to put me down a card and cost me two life. Like I would never play, I would never play Vendetta. You know, it's the best way for me to evaluate it, right? Like, I would not play a sorcery speed Vendetta against mono red. Because it's just not good enough, right? I
Yeah, I
mean,
agree.
instant speed, like, sure, I'll hit you during your draw step, take the tempo out of your play, or during your upkeep or whatever. Like, we talk about that, but no, I just don't think it's good enough, especially with aggro being so good.
So what are you planning on playing? Like, what do you have your eye on right now?
So I basically try to build two decks in standard at any given moment. Obviously I'm looking at Esper control, and then I'm trying to determine whether or not I'm going to build black, white, red, or junk. I guess I could also build Naya as well, but I have to get myself some dragons to do that. So,
I really
yeah.
like your junk list. I know that you were testing you're on your stream, which we'll talk about soon. I know you had mentioned a junk mid-range deck that I think was doing well in block. I think that was
Yeah.
block, and I really like the look of that. So that'd
It's
be
a
something I would
very,
try.
very sweet deck. I mean, like, you basically never lost to Mono Red. The only issue is that it now that Anger of the Gods is a card, it can't actually beat that card. So it really has to adapt a little. And thankfully, Theros gave us a lot of good cards that are on curve for that deck that could be very, very good. I'm actually very interested to see how Reaper of the Wilds ends up doing.
Oof, yeah.
Because like, you consider it versus the other four drops that are available to you in those colors. And the fact that you don't have to commit two green to it is really nice. The fact that it can get Death Touch is sweet because it can trade up any time. But like, and even getting Hexproof is great, so it dodges more removal. It's already a five drop, or it's already five in the butt. But being able to scry one every time a creature dies is like ridiculous when you're playing that card alongside like Desecration Demon, for example, right? So it's pretty good. I'm excited to see where it goes, and it's really going to depend on like the success of that deck. I think is going to depend. That's a deck that will use Thoughtseize in the main deck, right?
Yeah.
So.
See, I'm kind of like you in the sense that this is the first rotation that I feel prepared for. This is the second rotation I've been through since I came back to the game, and I felt so unprepared for the last one. And I made sure, you know, a good month or two before rotation to start stockpiling cards. So it wasn't that I wanted to have more than one deck built, but I wanted to know that I could. So when I started looking at all these lists, I have 75% of the cards. Like, I made sure to go on like a rare buying spree. So, you know, I have 2 Advent of the Worms. I have 2 Armada Worms. I have 2 Tristana. 2 Ralzerix. I have about 2 of most rares. So depending on what becomes hot, you know, I'm there. I don't have to get too many cards to be able to keep up with it. And I like that feeling. Whereas before, I had no idea what to do. I didn't know what cards to get. And it took me so long to jump in the pool. Whereas now I'm ready to go right out of the gate. And it was a really good feeling.
Nice. Yeah.
So going back to your stream, one of the things that you have going right now on Legit, you have your own series called Compulsive Research. So tell me a little bit about this, like how it got started and whatnot.
So it's a funny story because it wasn't always Compulsive Research.
Really?
Yeah. So my stream actually started around this time last year.
Okay.
And it started as Modern Mastery.
Okay.
And so the goal was, is it all came up one day because GP Toronto was happening. It was Modern format. And I decided that, you know, I've got a bunch of cards. I could get into this. I really think that I could day two a GP. Like, I know that I'm good enough to make day two at a Grand Prix. I just don't have the time to play enough, you know, or I'm not familiar with this. Or, you know, there's this reason, that reason. And ultimately, I'm just like, look, you know what? If I can dedicate the time, you know, to actually practicing effectively and understanding the format, then there's no reason why I shouldn't be able to day two a GP. Mm-hmm. And Medina was like, call. So we talked about it afterwards, and I was like, yeah, we, you know, it was on the show, right? So we went back and forth about it for a little bit, and then finally afterwards I said, okay, look, I said, here's what I'm prepared to do. Like, I need a moto daddy. I need a moto sugar daddy. And I said, if you're gonna be it, then I'm in, and I'll stream it, and I'll write articles for you, and it'll be a process, and the whole like learning how to play. I said, I'll flex my connections. I'll get sweet people on the show that'll help teach me the format and teach me how to play and co-pilot with me. Like, this will be a thing. And he goes, in, what deck do you want? You know? And I hadn't really done a lot of writing or articles or anything really seriously except for podcasting. Mm-hmm. Since I started, like when I first kind of started doing anything, I was writing articles for 60cards.com back when Smitty owned it.
Oh, okay. I remember those days.
Yeah. So, like, this was back in, I guess, the M11 days, M10, M11 days, and shards was still legal and that sort of thing, right? So we were just on the cusp of that, of shards rotating when I started writing a few articles for Jesse. And I hadn't really done anything since then. And I kind of had a bit of an itch, and I wanted to really put my money where my mouth was and, you know, really give a go at it. So I started the stream, and I basically just started with, you know, getting a hold of people that I knew about in the community that were very good at Magic and good at the format. So first and foremost, I grabbed, you know, well-renowned Canadian grinder Lucas Siao, who just recently had won the most recent Modern Grand Prix or something like that, or top 4th or 2nd or whatever. And I was just like, hey, Lucas, like, I got your, you know, contact information from KYT. Like, here's who I am. Let's do this, you know? And he was totally on board, and we had a blast. And then, so shortly after that, I learned so much, by the way, in the first month of that stream. Like, I can't even begin to tell you. I had Alex Hain on the stream. Mm-hmm. I had, at some point I had Tom Martell on the stream. Yeah. Like just so many awesome names. Like, and so it was really good. And the education that I received was just second to none, you know, and it's little generic, fundamentals that you would never actually think about. How do I learn that? But it's things like, when do you crack your fetch land?
Yeah.
You know, and it seems like such a ridiculous thing, but I mean, if you're running a land light deck like Rug Delver and you need to draw your land, you don't crack your land until after you draw your card. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you save your fetch land because you want to see if it flips your Delver, and maybe the card flips your Delver, but you don't want the card, so then you shuffle it away with the fetch land and draw a new card. Like,
That sounds like something I've been learning there. Somebody pointed out to me the other day with Jace Architect of Thought, where, you know, so let's say you have only Enter the Battlefield tapped lands in your hand, and you want to play a land for turn. You definitely want to, and you're planning on popping your Jace anyways. You might want to pop your Jace first, see if you can unveil an untapped land or a land that could enter untapped, and that might smooth out your curve a little bit. And that's something little I wouldn't think to do, but I hear you on that.
Yeah. So it was amazing. So my play improved like dramatically. Now, understand that this is running on the I've never really played Modo before. So like there were more, and I was playing on a terrible computer at the time. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you know, there was a lot of lag, and then there was a lot of misclicks. And so like the results didn't really translate online mm-hmm. as I expected them to, you know, but I knew the deck, I knew the format, I was really familiar with what I wanted to do. And then I saw what I was doing is I was also simultaneously grinding GPTs. And so the third one, my last shot, and I ended up taking the thing down. I played some of the best Magic of my life that day. Mm-hmm. And I just demolished the GPT, and it was great. And so I got my buys, and I went into Toronto, and then I proceeded to X3. Like it, like it's just no thing, right? But I mean, that's the awesome part is I sit down after my three buys, and I sit down for round four, and who's my first opponent? Lucas Seau. Tough beat, right? Tough beats. He's like, yeah. So at least I know your deck list. Thanks, Lucas. Thanks a lot. But it was sweet. So we ran that for a season, and then I kind of like wound it down after the GP, and then it just seemed like Modern went to sleep as a format, but people were still really excited because it was PTQ season. So I kind of took a little bit of a break, did the Christmas thing, and came back and ran it back, still as Modern Mastery, and just started doing it like, hey guys, send me your Modern lists, and if there's a sweet one, I'll play it. You know, so that was nice because I got a lot of people that came in and so many random lists that I was getting shipped. And it was really fun because we get to actually like play Magic for fun, which is not something that most of us adults can do very often.
Sure.
So it was a really neat experience. And then eventually I just got to the point where, you know, the Modern PTQ season was over. I mean, it's standard. So why don't we just play standard? But I can't rightly have a stream called Modern Mastery about standard. That just seems ridiculous. So we kind of took it internally to the legit MTG think tank, and compulsive research was what came out.
Very nice. Very nice. Do you have any favorite guests that you've had on since you've been doing either series?
So in no particular order, Shaheen Sarani was really good. Mm-hmm. Reed Duke was outstanding.
Loved that episode.
And Willie Edel mm-hmm. was hilarious. Like, hilarious.
Are there any guests you had on that maybe weren't as exciting as you thought, or maybe you didn't learn as much from as you thought you would?
No.
No. Okay. So I know sometimes it happens. I know I have a couple guests that, you know, I didn't get as much out of as I thought, or, you know, things like that. Sometimes it happens.
Sure. Yeah. I had to pause because I had to actually go through my encyclopedia.
See, I thought you were just trying to be nice and you were hesitating.
No. I'm just quickly flashing through the catalog. The mind is not as fresh as it once was in my youth, you see. Everybody that I've had on, I've been happy to have on. I've taken a lot away from it. And I mean, it may not have been as exciting for everyone else at times, mm-hmm. but I was getting a lot out of it. So sorry, guys.
Are there any guests on your wish list that you want to have on still?
Yeah. I've still got a few, actually. I really want to do, I want to have Marshall on. Marshall and I have done some co-piloting videos back in the day, like when I was doing videos for 60. Mm-hmm. And so I would love to be able to get him on, because I don't play a lot of limited. Mm-hmm. I'd love to get him on to like bird me on a Theros draft or something, yeah. You know? So that'd be sweet. And then I'm also looking as well to get, to Jerry would be sweet just because he's actually also hilarious. And I would love to get Owen on as well, because Owen and had just had so much fun. We had so much fun with him when he was on the A-team, mm-hmm. and I would love to, yeah, to have him on as well. Because, like, I watch him stream too, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'd be pretty awesome.
Very cool. Very cool. One of the things I'd been meaning to ask you, which I found really interesting, is when our boss, Mr. Medina, decided that he was going to quit the game and leave the community, you were one of the people who decided that you were going to stay at Legit along with me and several others. You obviously are somebody who probably wouldn't have a hard time finding a new home if you wanted to. And people seemed like they were surprised that you chose to stick around. What made you decide to do that, if I can ask?
What made you decide to stay, Aaron?
I have no problem answering that question. I decided to stay because I was being treated well. For me, it wasn't a matter of personal loyalty. It was a matter of I've always had a very low bar for myself. Like, it takes very little to make me happy. I freely admit that. Like, I know some people accuse me of being a princess and a diva and things like that or whatever, but I was looking at it from very basic essentials where it's like, I'm still being hosted. I still have a home. I'm still getting store credit. I'm still getting promoted. I'm cool. Like, I was happy at that point, and I didn't really have, I don't know John that well personally. I know him as a boss, and as a boss, he's a great boss. So for me, it was like, nothing had changed for me. Like, I was still getting all of my needs met. And I was under the impression that that would happen when the new owners came. And if the new owners came and those things weren't happening anymore, I would certainly leave at that point. But for everything else on my checklist, I'm cool. I didn't have a personal stake in it like I felt like other people did.
Sure. So, I stayed for a lot of the same reasons, but a lot of it is personal as well. I'm really loyal to what John built. John and I are still very good friends, and I consider us very good friends. And, I know that either one of us would basically, move heaven and earth to help the other if needed. And, he just emailed me today, just checking in, how are things going? And, and I would not leave him in his time of need. And, I mean, I'm perfectly happy here. I am well taken care of. I have received offers, like there's no question. I received two offers in particular, and only one of them was KYT. So,
I get offers from KYT all the time, but not necessarily regarding podcasting.
So I no, I've just I'm here. Like this is where this is where we are. This is what's going on. I am, I've definitely been well promoted, and I've got a lot of resources available to me that I wouldn't have had without, Legit. And I certainly, I'm not one to forget where I came from.
I think that's really important, and I know I've talked about this on other shows too. It always kind of bums me out when I see specifically Star City. Like, for some reason, people have it in their minds that Star City is the pinnacle of where to go. And I've seen people leave TCG Player, and I've seen people leave Gathering Magic that I consider to be good websites, like plum websites. And I feel like a lot of those websites get treated as sort of like starter wives, where it's like, I'm just killing time until Star City picks me up. Okay, thanks. And I feel like some of those sites do get, trashed on a little bit, where people forget that you can still, have your happy ending at Gathering Magic or at Channel Fireball, and that Star City's not necessarily the only end game. And I think I agree with you, where there are other viable homes out there. And I like seeing people not necessarily go for that, where it's, nope, I'm happy here. Yeah, you're shiny. Yeah, you're fun, but I've got a good thing here. And I think that's something we don't see enough of in the community. So. One of the articles I really enjoyed reading about you actually was on Legit. Heather did a profile about you. I think it was called Summon Legendary. And it was a whole bio about you. I got to see your daughter that we talked about earlier. And something in the article really struck me about you. You were talking about your family, and you had made a comment that in terms of magic, family comes first for you. If you didn't have the family you have now, and if you weren't so family oriented, how do you think you would look at magic differently?
Well, it's funny. I don't know if I'd still be playing.
Really?
Yeah, it's really funny. It's a funny question, actually. So I played Back in Revised, and I played fairly regularly through Revised until Tempest.
I loved Tempest. It was one of my favorite sets of all
Yeah, it
time.
was Tempest was just coming out, and that was when we were getting out. A bunch of people that we were playing with all were leaving for university, and it was just time to kind of move along. Like, we had done our first couple PTQs and that sort of thing. And I mean, my brother top eighted or was on the bubble, I guess, nine, for that. It was like back in the day. God, I played a Marlgeddon deck at that PTQ. And my brother played a modified Necropotence deck that revolved around skulking creatures and Tombstone Stairwell with Soul Shriek. Let me tell you, like, It was spicy.
Your brother sounds like my kind of guy.
He's a lot of people's kind of guy. You know what I'm saying? I'm the one you take home to mother and Mary. He's the one you take home at the end of the night at the bar. You know what I'm saying?
I do. I'll be IMing you my phone number. Keep going.
Sure. Yeah, he just got married, actually. Congratulations. Sorry.
Damn.
Yeah. I know all the good ones get snapped up so quick.
Right?
Anyway, so bottom line was is I got out of the game and I kind of only really coasted back in and back out casually. Like I'd buy a starter here or there, you know, or like in a, what I guess the pre-constructed decks. I'd buy a couple just in case we wanted to battle with friends or whatever. Like occasionally you see people, right? But it was a very, very long time till I got out and or since I got out. And then one day, my son was getting older and he just wasn't into books. Like books were not appealing to him as a small child. So the prospect of getting him to read was very difficult. He just didn't really seem to want to or have the attention span for it or, you know, just wasn't really interested. So he and I started to pick up, like, obviously it was around this time that Yu-Gi-Oh, the cartoon show, had come out.
Yeah.
And so he really enjoyed that, and we both did, you know, because I'm still a big kid when it comes to television and cartoons. Like, I will 100%. My daughter and I sit every Saturday morning and we watch the new episodes of Dragon Ball Z Kai, and we sit together and we sing the opening song together, and it's awesome. So yeah, family's really big, right? But I'm like raising the next generation of geeks.
That's great. I love
I know,
that.
absolutely, absolutely. So. He was really into the show, and I noticed that there was actually a card game, and so I, you know, started to do a little bit of investigation into it and understand it. And of course, my brother and I, you know, it was like something for us to do. And I'm like, hey, look, there's this card game. Like, do you want to try it out? Let's look at it. I bought a couple starters. You got to play this, whatever. And so my son would watch. Alex would watch us play, and he was like 4 or 5, whatever. And so he picked up very quickly how to play the game, but he still wasn't reading the cards, but he would know that this card can attack, and he would, you know, I mean, he's still young, and so he'd want to play. And so we looked at him and we're like, well, okay. So we tried to teach him to play to try to encourage him to read the cards. All it did was make him really good at subtracting thousands, and still just was stubborn with the reading. And so then we decided to pick up Magic again. Because it was like Yu-Gi-Oh! Is the gateway drug back into Magic. And so this would have been like at this point in time, he was reading, but still very badly and not really doing it of his own volition. And so then Magic came out and came back into his life. And he's like, can we play? And we said, look, Alex, this is way more complicated than Yu-Gi-Oh! I said, like, I can't take the time. There's so many different abilities and so many different things. I can't take the time to explain it to you. You're gonna have to learn to read. And he looks at me and he goes, okay. And he goes to his toy box and he pulls out a book and he sits down and starts reading. Right? So Magic taught my son to read. So would I still be playing Magic? I probably would not have been.
That's
Like I,
crazy.
yeah. So that's really wild, right? Now, I mean, let's just say, you know, God forbid something terrible happens to my family tomorrow, and all of a sudden I lose them all, and it's just me all alone as a bachelor again. I would probably do nothing but like work, stay up all night, mono grind moto, and make a run of the Pro Tour. Like that would be a thing. Just because it would be something to do. It's a community that I love to be a part of. But yeah, that's how it would change.
Do you two still play together, you and your son?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Do you see getting your daughter into it too?
She already shuffles cards almost as fast as Kibler does.
Really?
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
How does your wife feel about you playing Magic? Did she ever learn how to play?
She has no interest in playing.
Okay.
She's no interest in learning. She's the stone nut at opening packs, though.
Wow.
And she loves it. So I just like the last couple times I've got boxes, that was a long time ago, but I mean, just this weekend I had a bunch of people over and we were playing cards and one guy comes in and he's like, boom. We're like, what's this? He opens up this box and it's a case of Theros. He's like, get opening. And so my wife was there and he's like, here, Alana. She's like, oh, that's great. So she opened like 2.5 boxes of Theros and he made out like a fucking bandit. So But no, she supports it, and I mean, you know, it's great that I've been able to turn this hobby and this thing that I love into, like, she saw what it did for my son, right? She saw what it did for our relationship, and so she could never, you know, never be against it. But, you know, all things require balance. And
Yeah. I think it's really interesting. One of the things I'm really fascinated by is the idea of a family man or even a family woman, you know, reaching the heights of the pro tour. You know, because a lot of the people we see doing well do sort of fit that archetype. They're single, or they're in, like, they have girlfriends maybe, or they have maybe they have a wife maybe. You know, but you really don't see kids in the picture. You really don't see fathers and maybe even grandfathers or things like that be competitive. And I always think it's really interesting, and I would like to see that because a lot of our pros are getting older, and we do certainly have the new guard, but you know, I would love to see more people that have these solid family lives not give up the dream. Because I do feel like there's this weird, you know, idea that once you reach a certain age or once you reach a certain point in life, that has to stop. And I'd like to see people still have it all. I always root for people to have it all. And if there was some way that somebody could manage to juggle all of that, I would really root for that person pretty hard.
Well, Willie Adel is one that I was really able to connect with because of those parallels. You know, he just happens to be absurdly good at magic. So, but he, yeah, same thing, like wife, kids, and the whole nine. And he travels, and he's a pro, and you know, platinum and whatnot. And I mean, he was in the Players Championship. Like, you know, this is the guy. This is the guy you want to make it, because he fits that role exactly. So it's pretty cool.
Did talking to him and getting to know him maybe, you know, inspire you to try that for yourself? Like, do you think that you could maybe have it all?
No.
Okay.
And only because, like, I don't have the fund. Like, I recognize, I'm at least self-aware enough to realize that I'm not equipped well enough with a fundamental base,
Okay.
just because I spent so much time away from the game and so much time playing casual Magic that, you know, I miss a lot of these things. Like, it amazes me too when I'm listening. I have a buddy who plays a lot of poker, and it amazes me when people can sit there and go, yeah, so I was in this pot and I had ace deuce off or whatever, and he had nothing but babies, and he's like runs through the entire set of like bet amounts and sequences and all that sort of stuff. And I just like, wow, how do you know that? I'm like, how many hands do you play? He's like, oh, I don't know, 400. Like how do you pick that out? Like, that just, it, to me, that just seems so ridiculous. And like, Nina is another person that does that with Magic games. It's crazy. Like, that she can recollect the sequence of plays from fucking games that she's played 10 years ago. Like, it blows my mind. Like, the skill of the capacity of people like this, like that mindset for the game, I do not have. Like, I just do not have that attention to detail for this game. And I recognize that it's things like that and a lack of time that I have to devote to skill sharpening that inhibits that. I mean, there's a lot of things, but I don't have the same natural talent, and I don't have the time to hone to make up for it.
One talent that you do have, I don't know if you're aware of this, Scotty, but anytime people talk about like the good interviewers in the community, your name comes up a lot. You're often described as one of the best interviewers in the community. Have you given any thought to trying to find more ways to like show off the side of yourself? Like, were you aware that people thought this about you?
It's interesting, Aaron, that you should say that. How is it exactly that you feel about all of that?
Are you saying that people say that about me?
No, I'm just wondering, because I know that, you know, you are a very good interviewer, and the feedback is very strong, and I know that the community feels like you are certainly, you know, right up there. And it just seems like every single person that says, yeah, you know, Aaron, geez, you're really one of the best. Scotty Mac's amazing though. And I just can't help but think that that's got to stick in your crotch just a little, huh?
Actually, no. I like the idea. It's actually funny you mentioned that because you got Mana Deprived has recently had their own show. Matt Mendoza does it Across the Table, and I got to meet Matt at Gen Con, and he had talked about starting an episode or doing an episode with me, him, and Robert Martin, who does Inside the Magic Studio, and we were totally down. Like, I'll admit there was a point where I didn't care for Robert Martin, not because he was another interviewer, but because I felt like he sort of sold out a little bit. But I love it. I wish we had more people doing this. Like, I love seeing the people behind the deck. And if Matt can bring it out of them, if you can bring it out of them, I just think we need more of that. And I think that we need more, you know, to go off on a little bit of a tangent, you know, people like to talk about how we don't make personalities anymore. We don't sell the idea of a celebrity. And I really like that. I like seeing people's flaws and people's, goofy habits that they might have. And I think we don't see enough of that. And that leads us to not want to root for people, I guess.
Sure.
And I find that I root for somebody more when I can say that I've met them or I like them or there's some personality there. You know, Patrick Chapin seems like a really great guy and Lord knows he's written a book and he's done all this stuff, but I don't know him. He's never talked to me. I know nothing really about the guy. Whereas Jackie Lee, I've had her on my show. I have friends who know her. I've gotten to see her Facebook posts. I've seen the way that she interacts with people. I have more of a personal stake in her success. So I feel like she is me. I am her. I'm rooting for her. And I really want to root for people, but I can't root for people just based on numbers.
Sure.
I can't root for somebody just because they have so many pro points. I need to get a little more invested in you. And I feel like, what you do and with Heather's articles that she's been doing for Gathering Magic, it gives me more people that I want to root for. So I'm all
Nice.
for it. I really believe there's room for everybody.
I've never actually Heather approached me a couple times actually about doing an interview show, like just branching out and doing something, just doing that. It's not something it's so strange because we did so much of it on A-Team. Like there was a period of time where all we did was interview people before we added, the fourth permanent member and I don't know. I got tired. I met all the people I wanted to meet. Like I don't know. Like it's I don't want it to come off like been there, done that. And actually, it's funny you should say that. The Ari Lax episode, I literally shit the bed on. Like I felt like I did such a terrible job. Like
Why?
it was just so bad because it was just not a good like I was okay. So I was flying by the seat of my pants. We had no idea really that Ari was going to be on except for maybe like midday. And normally what I'll do is I'll take the time and I'll, I mean, I read everything, right? I listen to a million podcasts. I read absolutely everything. Like I'm fairly familiar with people's accomplishments. Not to the, Brian David Marshall Pro Tour historian who won this PGQ in 1987 in whatever city, state, whatever. Like that guy's savant and he's amazing. But like I know who's who in the community. I know what they've written, what they specialize in, and I mean that's my job. But like I didn't take any time to write anything down for Ari at all, like nothing. I did like no research. I read his articles, I watch his videos, but I felt like I did no homework, and I feel like I did a terrible job because of it. I felt like I was stumbling and tripping over things, and just it didn't feel comfortable, didn't flow like. And that's really important. I mean, you talk offline about, stalking your prey. And I really think that it like couldn't be more important because you need to understand what it is that you want out of your subject, and you need to understand what you want them to bring for you. And you also need to understand what they're comfortable talking about and how they like to interact and behave with people. Like there have been some interviews that we've done on A-Team that were a little bit more awkward because, as you well know, some people just aren't socially loquacious. Like that's fine. So for example, we had an interview with Owen Turtenwald and Brian Kibler was amazing. Owen Turtenwald was amazing. Like because it was very much just like, let me ask you a little bit about where you came from and then just stay and shoot the shit with us. And it was fucking hilarious. Like Cedric Phillips was amazing. So good to hear those stories. Like AJ always comes with some unbelievable stories as well.
Is it
And
soccer?
yeah, oh
Okay.
yeah. AJ's been on a few times actually. AJ was on our short list, one of our short lists for fourth member actually. He was interested,
Oh,
but
wow.
yeah. But it's just a lot of like time and I think KYT talked about it, so I won't belabor the point. But it's very, very different when you get somebody like Josh Utter Layton, for example, who is actually just literally the nicest guy on the planet. And probably one of the most brilliant minds of magic I've ever seen in my entire life. And like being able to discuss this game with him is a privilege. But he's, I mean, he's not as outgoing as Brian Kibler.
Sure.
You
Yeah,
know?
I've had people suggest that with Melissa DeTora. Like, I've had so many. She's probably the one person that people have recommended to me more than anybody, because of the things she's done, because of other things. And people are like, "You've got to get DeTora on your show." Problem is, DeTora is game face all the time. I love her. Lord knows, I'm so proud of her. I root for her. I had the opportunity to stay with her at the TCG Invitational in her hotel room. I nearly died.
Nice.
I was queening out so hard. But the reality is that, can I have her on my show, and is she going to talk? Is she going to be okay with how I do things, that I am sort of scandalous, that I am more fun? And those are valid concerns, and I hate to say it, but I just don't think I would get that out of her. And that's really hard to have to say, because you want to believe, and you want to believe there's something in everybody, and you want to believe that you're the one that can pull it out of them. And sometimes it's just not the case. Yeah. Do you have any other advice for people that might want to get better at interviewing? Other than the stalking part.
So you need to be able to really effectively listen. And you need to be able to listen and think at the same time without getting your two signals crossed. It's actually a lot harder than it sounds. So start there. Also, never ask a close-ended question unless you are trying to hammer a point home. So those are pretty simple, silly ones, but.
Yeah, I'll admit, for me, I've had to really, I'm a little bit of a diva in the sense that I have to tailor my surroundings. Like, when I'm doing an interview, I close out most of my tabs. I try not to look at anything while I'm doing this. I mostly just have my notebook and I play with my hands a little bit. I have the lights down low, whatever. I really have to focus, because I feel like I know, I feel like I've seen interviewers just sort of space a lot. And nothing offends somebody more than, like you said, feeling like they're not listening to you. Yeah, so I really want them to feel like they're the only one in the room. I try to imagine them sitting in front of me. I make a lot of hand gestures as if they were. That's really kind of how I try to do things. So,
Makes sense.
and you had mentioned that you have some experience doing interviews on the A-Team. The A-Team is obviously one of the best podcasts out there. Depending on who you ask, it's either number one or number two, but it's still, the show to beat. Very, very good show. I have to say, though, that I've started to enjoy the show a lot more since you guys have matured a little bit. And that's not to say that you were immature, but the fact that
No,
you
we were.
guys But the fact that you guys are really coming into adulthood, and you're very grounded, you're a lot more grounded, and KYT is getting a bit more direction in his life, and things like that. And Jay's even kind of mellowing out a little bit. I'm noticing. It's subtle, but it's there. And I enjoy the show a lot more. I feel like the quality's better. I relate to the conversations more. I think Jeremy's a really good fit. With that said, though, you recently got the chance to attend Jay's wedding. And I watched the video that KYT made, as sketchy as it was. But what was it like going to Jay's wedding?
It was an amazing time, and the vacation was outstanding. It came at just the right time for my wife and I, and we really just enjoyed the time away. Now that said, I mean, everything leading up to the trip was, comedy of errors unto itself.
What happened?
Well, it's just awesome because, we cover, it's a long flight, and like flying's not cheap in Canada. Sorry, guys. Those of you that are, live in the, privileged air transit capacities of the United States of America don't understand what it's like to have to go one equivalent state over and pay, $800 for a plane ticket.
What?
Like, it's ridiculous.
Oh.
I'm exaggerating slightly. It's six,
Okay.
but, anyways.
So where are you guys in relation to each other? Like, where are you in Canada? Where's Boosh? Where's KYT?
Sure. You know what?
Are we going to have a geography lesson?
Hold on one second.
I know, actually, it's actually, you're not the first person to say that Canada flights are kind of crazy. I was actually talking to my old podcasting partner the other day, and she was talking about how she managed to get some cheap flights in the United States, and she had said the same thing, that she was paying at least $600 between, Canadian flights, and that's
It's
crazy.
completely ludicrous. So let me put it to you this way. So if KYT lives in New York, then I live in Washington, D.C.
Okay, that's not too bad.
That's not too bad, okay? And Jay lives in San Francisco. Or the West. Like, Like, it, honestly, Jay, oh, so here's the truth. Jay lives in Vegas comparatively. Okay, so it's still over there.
Mentally too.
Yeah. And the wedding was actually in Los Angeles. So like that's the equivalent of the trip. So I flew the equivalent of Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles.
Man.
And it cost me a lot of money. Okay. So the wife and I flew out, and you know, because I had to have my date with me, and we went all the way up to Vancouver and then slingshot back into Kamloops. The flight was great.
Kamloops?
Kamloops
What's
was the
that?
name of the city. Yeah, it's actually legally a desert, but it's in a mountain valley.
It sounds like the name of a cereal.
It was yeah.
Kamloops. Okay.
Except that it's just beautiful. Like
Okay.
it was a picturesque, stunning view of Canadian landscape that I will probably never see again in my life.
Wow.
So it was really, really quite the experience. And we kind of show up and it's like this little, you know, oil and mining town, and you know, it's just everybody is really super nice. And it blew us away how nice everyone was. Now, again, I talk about the comedy of errors. Like we show up and our flight was late and delayed. So we actually had to like we had to go to Vancouver and then go from Vancouver to Kamloops, and we had to take a connecting flight. And we basically like landed in Vancouver and we weren't even sure we were going to make our plane. You know, at that point in time, is your luggage going to make it? Like, we don't even know. So we're like, fuck it, we'll just get on the plane. And so we get on the plane, we fly to Kamloops, we land. Sure enough, thank God our luggage is there. And we show up, and Jay's like, hey, we're like, hey, we're here. Yeah, we're sacked. We've been awake since like 5 in the morning. He's like, great, it's 1 o'clock here. I'm like, fuck. And he goes, all right, so yes, we have dinner tonight. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, we told you, we have dinner tonight. I'm like, no, you didn't tell me. He's like, I totally told you. I'm like, dude, believe me when I tell you, you did not tell me. He's like, oh, well, there's dinner tonight.
Now you know.
I'm like, thanks. He's like, but you don't have to go. I'm like, oh, obviously I have to go. I'm the best
Right?
man. This is not an option. So I'm like, no, I'm going. Take me to my hotel so I can check in. He's like, all right. So we go to check in. So we got to check into this hotel, which is like $275 a night. And
Worth the $275?
we're there like 4 nights. It's like stupid.
Was it worth the $275?
So we arrive and it's power's out in half the hotel.
That answers my question of whether or not it was worth the $275 right there.
It ended up being gorgeous. The view was fine. They fixed the power by the time we got back from dinner. Like everything was good. But like it was just it like really? Really the power's out? All right. But you can sure take my money though, can't you? Anyways. Yeah, so it was just that kind of thing. And it just felt like everything leading up to the wedding was just like one thing after another. And the wedding came and it was amazing. And everybody was amazing. And it was such a gorgeous ceremony. And, you know, KYT and I were both, I mean, he kind of talked about it, I think, a little bit during your interview too. You know, we kind of got a Google Maps view of where it was being held. And he's like, yeah, we're getting married in Megan's parents' backyard. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, I'm traveling this far and spending this much money to go to a backyard wedding. The fuck was I thinking? But you know what? We went. It was amazing. Everybody was super outstanding. And like it turned out to be just stunning. The view was amazing. Like it was the perfect wedding for them. Perfect. And I was so honored to be there.
And you were able to also rally the community. You guys had door prizes and things like that, so people could contribute money, and that seemed like it turned out well.
Yeah, we were able to raise like KYT and I pitched in also. Like we did like our wedding gifts in combination, but we raised like $1,450 for them,
Wow.
which is literally like the largest gift that they received for their entire wedding family.
Oh, that must have been nice.
It like Megan bawled instantly. Like
Oh.
you saw her at the end of the video, like she was a mess, and it was amazing. So thank you everybody that participated in that. It was super sick.
Oh, that sounds incredible. Like just
I
and
mean,
had
it's no 14-5, but it'll do.
Now, do you get to see those guys often, or is this a pretty rare occurrence?
No, it's very rare. It's very, very rare. Like this, so this is going to sound silly. That was the third time I've been in Jay's presence physically.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was there a part of you, like when you first met them, that, you know, did you worry that the chemistry may not be there? Because I think we've all had situations like that where somebody's really, really great online and then you meet them in person and it's just not the same.
No.
Okay. So it translated pretty easily.
Instantly.
Wow.
It's like, yeah, we're brothers from another mother. It's weird. I have such love for my podcast mates. Like, that's the other thing that my wife is really supportive of, is the show. Like, it honestly, it doesn't matter how much time or like how busy we get or, you know, like whatever the hell happens, it doesn't matter. I'll always still be able to podcast because the friends that I have met that are my true friends that I've met through this show will never be replaced and I will never abandon them.
That's like, really lovely.
They're absolutely my boys. Like KYT and Jay, I love them so much. It's not even fair. You know, like we could be doing whatever, and provided it's not a family member's birthday, I'll be like, yeah, KYT's in town for a PTQ. She's like, I'll see you Sunday. I'm like, cool. Like, it's not even a discussion.
That's very, very cool.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about one of your boys a second, because apparently I inadvertently had started some drama with my KYT show. So somebody had listened to the KYT show and then went to Reddit, because all good things happen at Reddit. And they had started a thread in one of the magic Reddits and had basically tried saying that from listening to KYT's interview, they took it to mean that Jay was a little bit difficult to work with and that he had very much had a say in terms of who the fourth guest was going to be, and you know, maybe he's vetoing topics or whatever, and they had used KYT's interview to suggest that he was a little bit difficult to work with. How do you feel about this? Like, is that true? Like, is Jay the diva that Redditor made him out to be?
No. So Jay is very particular about who we get on the show. And for a while, and also, like, that's not just from that's guests and potential cast members. And he has a lot to say about it. He actually cares a lot about the show. Because if he's going to do something, he's the type of guy that he wants to be the best at it. And he's very aware of quality control in that capacity.
Sure.
That said, when it comes to things like topics, when it comes to things like, you know, all the other podcast style decisions, he's really, really a good team member, like absolutely. And I wouldn't say that he's difficult to work with, but he has very strong opinions and he defends them very well and he's very passionate about them. You know, and he is the first to call you on a bullshit support. Like if you say, I think I should have I should have Aaron on our show because I was on her show and it's only fair, he'd be like, fuck you, I haven't been on her show.
And I actually would like to have him on. I really think that I really think there's a lot underneath all of that. And I'd love to have him on. If I thought for a second I could have him on, I would love to complete my sort of A-team tour.
Well, if you haven't asked, you'll never know.
It's very true.
So put on your big girl panties and type the email.
Scotty, you told me I didn't have to wear panties for this show.
Are we going there already? It's still early.
But that's good to know. That's good to know that Jay's – and I had a feeling that would be the case. Like, I didn't take the interview that way. I know most of my listeners didn't. I don't even remember who tweeted it to me, but somebody had tweeted me the Reddit thread, and they were like, girl, what did you do? And I'm like, what did I do now? And it was just really funny that my show was sort of used as evidence as to, you know, KYT says, you know, he's a diva. You know, he has so much control. And I didn't take it like that at all. Are there other –
Reddit's like the National Enquirer of the internet.
Are there other misconceptions that you've heard about the A-team or that people have about the show that aren't true?
No, you know what? Okay. So this is the most fucked up thing about being on the A-team.
Speak on.
Okay. Okay. I don't understand. Like, so apparently a lot of people listen to our show.
Yeah.
Okay. But like, I have no visibility into what those numbers actually are. I knew what those numbers were a year and a half ago.
Really? You don't know, like, your subscribers download?
Nope. I have no idea. I have no idea. Yep. So it's weird because, like, if we get a lot of comments, then I get it, right? But like we, so I went to GP Calgary with Jay, and we did like an A-team token signing and stuff at the booth, and like there was just not that many people that came up to get tokens signed, you know, that were like, oh yeah, hey, I love the show, I listened to it. Like there were maybe like four groups of them that were there, and that was awesome. And I mean, like the Mana Deprived parties in town are always amazing, but a lot of that is just like local people. Like when I'm doing like Mana Deprived parties in Montreal, or I do Mana Deprived parties in, you know, whatever, like that's a party. That's something different. Like it's a different set of, it's a different thing that I'm marketing.
Sure.
And it's just so strange that like, I just don't feel the celebrity from the show.
Really?
I don't. Yeah, I really don't. And it's not until people start telling me like, Scotty, you don't understand. Like everybody listens to the A team. Like I hear you talk about us and like and the reverence and oh my god, if I could ever collect the A team. I'm like, the fuck? We're just a bunch of people. Like we're actually not that cool. Mm-hmm. Like we're fun, but we're not that cool. Anyways, it's just it blows me away. Like when we were at what killed me, we're in Calgary when it really started to maybe like sink in that this could be a thing. We were in I was there with Jay and we had Louis Acosta and Jason Clough with us, and the four of us are just sitting there. We're at Montana's. We're on Milestone's patio having dinner before we're going to Jay's bachelor party. And there were three separate people that came up and bought us rounds of drinks.
Wow.
Strangers that none of us knew. So like that was awesome. Like those are the things that happen and you're just like, wow.
Have you thought about that? Like, is that something you maybe, do you have a means to find out how many subscribers you have, or do you purposely not want to know?
That's weird for me. Like, maybe I do want to know. Like, it depends on the point that you're at, I guess, with it. Because, you know, there was a period of time where we were shopping around, you know, during just before Face-to-Face renewed our contract. Like, there was a period of time where we were looking at shopping around. And, like, that's when I knew how many hits we had. Mm-hmm. That's when I knew how many downloads we had. And, like, back then, we had about 10,000 unique downloads a week. And like that's a lot, but like limited resources smokes the crap out of us. And like I have no idea what it's at now, right? Like it was a year and a half ago. But I don't know. Like that's a lot, but I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I purposely don't want to know. Yeah. I know people have offered. I know Medina offered, Heather offered at one point. The only thing that I can say that I know is Stitcher. Stitcher gives you a beta portal dashboard, and that gives you your downloads and listens and things like that. So I know how many Stitcher subscribers I have. I know how many Stitcher downloads I've had. I don't know anything about Legit. I don't know anything about iTunes. I do like to look at the iTunes charts because we show up on the other games charts, which you guys top a lot of the time. If you
oh, really?
That. Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, you and Limited Resources usually are swapping, where one day they will be number one day you'll be number one. You might fall at number three, but you're back at number one. You guys are pretty, you know, pretty often sitting at the top of the charts. But but I'm just saying, is that something I don't want to know about? Because I feel like I get very self-conscious about that kind of thing. I do get very competitive about that kind of thing. It did sort of eat me with my last podcast that I was in. I became very obsessed with it. It made me feel very bad at one point that I wasn't doing as well as I hoped. And then that affected the quality of the show. So I like sort of being in this bubble of oblivious, like where I just don't think about that, because I feel like if I were, then, and I kind of experienced this a week ago, I had a little mini breakdown where, you know, it did start to hit me that people are enjoying the show, and I am having people come up to me at events that recognize my voice. And there was a moment where I started becoming very self-conscious, where I was like, well, what if I change the intro music and people don't like it? And what if I have this guest on and people don't like them? And that was never something I thought about before, but it really did hit me where, oh my God, people are listening. And knowing that really threw me off the game, because I've been doing this the whole time, assuming nobody gave a shit. Yeah. And now that people are giving a shit, I did start feeling a little bit of pressure. And I had to sort of take a moment to be like, it doesn't matter. Just do what you've been doing. Do you, and you'll be fine. And I don't want to know. I would, if anybody tried to tell me, I would probably just put my fingers in my ears and do the la 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 la, because it's, I don't want to know.
It's so fair.
Yeah. But I'm glad you can relate to that, because I thought I was the only weirdo who purposely just didn't know.
No, it's, and you know what? It's all about preserving the quality of the show, right? Like, I mean, we just go out there and we just like to have fun. and we talk about stuff and just enjoy each other's company. And thankfully, we have this wonderful hobby to keep us all connected. And thankfully, people like us. So, yeah. I mean, you guys keep listening and we'll keep producing them.
Absolutely. So if people do like you, Scotty Mac, or if they want to like you a little bit more, how can they get a hold of you? Where can they find you?
Sure. So I'm, as Aaron found out today, or yesterday rather, I'm actually just Mr. Scotty Mac everywhere. You can find me on Facebook under Mr. Scotty Mac. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Scotty Mac. That's MrScottyMac. You can also find me on Google Plus under Mr. Scotty Mac. You can reach me via email at MrScottyMac@gmail.com. My phone number is actually... No, I'm just kidding.
You can find him on Adult Friend Finder at Mr. Scotty Mac.
No, that one's not me.
Anymore. Well, I'm really glad that we got to do this, Scotty. You were everything I thought you would be, and this was really... And I appreciate you being more of a... This was a last-minute proposal, so I appreciate you at the last minute saying that you would do this and making time for me. It really does mean a lot.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean... You know, you've got a very good show and, you know, part of the legit family. There's nothing we wouldn't do for one another. So, you know, it's absolutely an honor. I'm flattered to be episode 60.
Well, thank you again. I really appreciate this. And if anybody else is listening and you've enjoyed what you've heard here on the Deck Tees, you can always find me first and foremost on legitmtg.com. Then you can find me on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Feel free to leave me some stars or a thumbs up or a positive review. If you want to know more about me, you can find me personally on Twitter at Original Estrus. That's OriginalOestrus. If you just want to follow the show and happenings with that, you can follow the Deck Tees at the Deck Tees, or you can send me an email at estrus@elitistjerks.com. Thank you guys so much for listening and for sticking with me through the last 59 episodes. And here's to another 59. So take care of yourselves. Bye.